Spirit Blade Underground, Episode 403. Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Audio file encryption processing. Transmission decoded. Begin playback for system file. Spirit Blade Underground, Episode 403.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and community you can check out at ChristianGeekCentral.com. I'm Peter Franzen from Spirit Blade Productions, producing entertainment and resources to hopefully equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and like me to live more and more for Christ. For more info and some free goodies, check out SpiritBlade.com. On the show today, my review of Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice, and also some thoughts on why the resurrection is vitally important for Christian geeks to believe in. All right, let's get to it. My father once told me that I could use my powers to make a difference. He told me I had a responsibility to help others. He told me I could save this world, save everyone. Then he told me, walk the gerbil, walk the gerbil. Frickin' weirdo.
This is really slow, isn't it? That theme doesn't sound near as cool when all you hear is my... But I really like the way they use it. I really like what Hans Zimmer came up with for the Superman theme in Man of Steel, which returns again in Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice. I'm Peter Franzen from ChristianGeekCentral.com and SpiritBlade.com with an uncut review of Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice. All right, so let me give you a little synopsis. The IMDb, minus one word I'm going to blank out, synopsis reads, fearing the actions of Superman are left unchecked, Batman takes on the Man of Steel, while the world wrestles with what kind of a hero it really needs. With Batman and Superman fighting each other, a new threat, blank, is created by Lex Luthor. It's up to Superman and Batman to set aside their differences, along with Wonder Woman, to stop Lex Luthor and blank from destroying Metropolis. I'm putting that on the off chance that you didn't watch some of the more recent trailers for this, have been trying to be on media blackout and stuff. I didn't even think they should have mentioned Wonder Woman there, but whatever. This is going to be a spoiler-free review. I'm going to have, I think, another video that'll go up shortly after this where I'll just go nuts on spoilers and talk about what I experienced. I hope you'll come back for that one after you see the movie, but this one should be safe for you if you watch it before seeing the movie. So let's talk about the story a little bit. Now, if you liked Man of Steel, I think you're probably going to like this one. I loved Man of Steel. I went in with some reservations, and I also went in with reservations about this movie, but I really, really enjoyed it a lot. It's my kind of superhero movie. I'm not really into the Marvel movies, what they've been doing for a long time now, which is, you know, just kind of fun and, I don't know, whatever. This is like weighty. This is weighty. There's emotional weight. There's weighty issues that people are dealing with, weighty experiences people are dealing with, and an overall very serious tone. There are chuckles, but they're brief and rare releases from the tension. Yay! That's how I prefer my superhero movies. So if you like a serious superhero movie, but maybe that has more spectacle than, say, the Chris Nolan Batman movies, that cuts loose a little bit more with the action than those movies did, then I think you're really going to enjoy this experience. It's also a very character-driven experience. Now, if you're a person who really likes story and story structure and story just kind of progressing in this beautifully mathematical equation, a canonical way, this is probably not going to be your experience. Now, I don't know that because story tends to kind of go off of my radar when I'm really experiencing a movie or a book with characters that I'm invested in. I'm just kind of like, I don't care about your precious story and how beautifully constructed it is. I just want characters that I can care about. And that can be the result of script, that can be the result of performances, that can be the result of score, that can be the result of all kinds of different things that come together that allow me to care about characters. And there are far too few experiences in movies, games, any medium of fiction for me that I really feel like I care about the characters. And that was certainly true for me in Man of Steel. I cared about so many of those characters, and I really found myself caring about the characters in Batman vs. Superman. The Lois and Clark romance slash relationship has moved forward a ton and yields some interesting things. It's surprising because they don't give like a boatload of screen time to it, but you can just see how it's advanced and you invest in that. At least I did. I invested in their relationship. Clark still has a deep relationship with his mom, Martha Kent, and in a sense still with his dad, which they explore in an interesting way. His mom clearly loves him deeply, and it shows as she's kind of struggling with kind of how what kind of counsel to give him. You know, you see in one of the trailers, she effectively says, yeah, be their hero, be what they want you to be, or you know what, be none of that, because you don't owe them anything. So, you know, just like Pa Kent did in the first movie, I think she knows what the right thing is, and she wants to present that to him as an option, but at the same time, she loves her son, and she just wants to side with him and care for him, you know, and I feel like I would struggle with the same thing if it was my son grown up trying to, you know, asking me, should I go out and basically, you know, give up any semblance of a normal, happy life so that I can just serve humanity? I'd be like, ugh. I don't know, kiddo. I mean, I would want to tell him, yes, do that. That is so Christ-like. That is so good for you to have that kind of perspective. But as a parent, ugh. So I felt like her love for him, as well as her moral compass, were both kind of like present, and it was wonderful. Wonderful and very relatable. Bruce Wayne is still dealing with the death of his parents, and I think that's wonderful. You have to do that. Every time you have a movie that's featuring Batman, you've got to hammer again, remind us what the death of his parents meant to him, because when you forget that, then suddenly he's just a guy in a rubber suit. You know, maybe filmmakers feel like they shouldn't do that every time there's a Batman movie. Oh, we don't want to keep hammering that. Yes, hammer it. He's not over it. If he was over it, he would hang up the rubber suit. But he's a little bit messed up because of this horrific thing that happened to him as a child. And you have to remind us of that so that we will care about what's driving him. We will want to kind of root for him, even as we feel bad that he's living in such a tragic, you know, mental and emotional state. So absolutely them coming back, dealing with the death of his parents again, and showing us how he's still working through it or not working through it. And also there's hints of tragedies over the years that he's had to endure. So it's very character-driven stuff with Bruce Wayne. I love it. Clark is still struggling, struggling even more so now with the fact that many of the world are fearing him, they're hating him, or they're even blaming him for Zod's horrific acts at the end of Man of Steel. This is not a world where Superman is a beacon of light to everyone, and there was a time when I would have been concerned about that, that I felt like, you know, Superman should be the one that everybody trusts, everyone loves, and stuff like that, and as insiders, you know, as audience members who don't exist in this world, we know that actually he is those things. He is a beacon of hope, he is a beacon of light, he is a person that I would trust my son to be around. Maybe even if I wasn't there, unlike the Superman in the comics who's always angry and burning things. but anyway, hopefully DC will fix that eventually. Come on, DC. But anyway, despite this not being a world where he's a beacon of light to everyone, he has never, I don't think, resembled Jesus more in how he does in this movie, because in this movie he's enduring shame, he's enduring hatred, and all while giving everything that he has to save the world from death. There's some beautiful pictures of Jesus in this movie. Some that I am convinced were intentional, others that may have not been, but God and his sovereignty, I think, brings them out just the same through this movie. Anyway, there's a few unclear moments in the story where seeds seem to be planted for a future Justice League movie, but it's nothing that disrupts the main story. I kind of knew what these seeds were and their significance because I'm familiar with the DC universe, but I asked my wife afterward, how did you feel about that weird thing that just showed up and you didn't know what was going on? And her response was basically that it happened and then it passed, and you know, she was back in the story without worrying about what she didn't understand in that little weird moment there, you know. So it doesn't bring the story down, I don't think, in any way. The main focus of the movie is Batman and Superman, and Wonder Woman is a distant third. So I want to be clear about that. One of the fears that I had was that they were going to be trying to cram way too many characters. There's, you know, cameos of three other characters that are going to, I'm sure, be in the Justice League movie, but the way those cameos happen is very organic to this story, and it makes sense, and they don't spend time introducing who they are. They don't need to. It wouldn't make sense to do that in this story, but they're still still there. It's, you know, it's it was really kind of neat how they did that. They're really just they almost didn't even need to be in this movie, but they were just nice little cameos there. So really, the bulk of the time is given to Batman and Superman. Wonder Woman's a distant third. They don't really go into her character. She just kind of serves as this somewhat of a mysterious figure that comes on the scene, and I think she works fine in that way. I don't think we have to understand everything about who she is, where she comes from, and I think she still kind of fits in this story. There's plenty of action, but also plenty of time dealing with characters and the fallout from Zod's attack. This is a world where destruction is weighty and significant. So when something blows up, you know, unlike, say, in what I have felt and experienced in Marvel movies, when a car blows up or a building, you know, a side of a building explodes or something like that, in those movies, I'm like, whoa, that's crazy. Well, and in this movie, as it was in Man of Steel, when something like that happens, I'm like, oh my gosh. Because the way they tell these stories and the world that they have set up indicates to me that there is probably death that is happening. People are probably dying, and we're going to feel at some point, or someone in the story is going to feel at some point, the fallout from that. So it's action that is in every way the spectacle that you would find in, say, a big Marvel Avengers movie. But that spectacle, I wasn't numb to that spectacle as I was in the Avengers 2 especially, and in other Marvel movies, because I was feeling the emotional weight of the consequences of that spectacle. And that's a really important thing for me. So let's see here. So when the blows are exchanged between characters as well, I also felt the emotional motivations of those blows, because they set them up in advance. What's driving each of these characters? Why they feel so passionately they have to fight this person, what it means to them. So you know what it means to them when they are punching each other out. It's just not, there's been a misunderstanding, brr, oh, I'm angry, you know. So like, if you compare it to, like, say, the fight between Thor and Captain America and Iron Man in the Avengers, that was just kind of a cool thing to see these guys going at each other. Oh, there was a little misunderstanding and now they're going to blows. No, when these guys go to blows, it's because there are major things at stake that are driving them to go at each other like that. And so you feel those, I feel those blows in a much more intense, engaging way. Now, I've heard that critics are slamming this movie. I'm really interested to get into those reviews. I didn't want to touch any of them before processing and having my own thoughts on this. So I don't know why the critics, I guess, are slamming this movie. I wouldn't be surprised to hear that people who prioritize story over character in fiction have issues with this movie, because the structural tidbits of plot development really aren't on my radar much when I have characters that I can care about, as I certainly did in this movie. So if you're a story person, you know, maybe take my review with a grain of salt. If you really care about, if you prioritize, I should say, character-driven stories, and maybe the story itself doesn't really matter, it's construction and all that, you know, clever, skilled stuff, you know, of constructing stories mathematically or whatever the crap. if you want characters that you can care about, I think you're going to find that in this movie. And I think you will, even if you don't have experience with the DC universe. I do wonder sometimes if my knowledge of the DC universe, I for years have been a fan of the DC universe until the New 52. That's when I was like, oh, they are screwing up everything. Goodbye. You know, I still have all my old great DC comics. But I know these characters, and I know their hurts, their pains, what they long for, you know. And so I wonder if some of that kind of made some moments more emotional for me. But in talking to my wife afterward, who has very little exposure and knowledge of the DC universe, I don't think it added much. I think that what they set up in the movie itself provides the emotional basis for those kinds of heart-wrenching or weighty moments. So when the final villain appears at the end, I thought, okay, well, this is when things will start to suck and be all about CG and explosions. I was like, okay, just kind of brace yourself, Peter. This is kind of where it's going to go downhill a bit and kind of end with a whimper. I could not have been more wrong. The most emotionally satisfying parts of this movie were during the last fight with the villain and after that. They leave things in an interesting place, and I cannot wait to see what they do when they pick up the threads of this story in, I assume, the Justice League movie coming out in 2 or 3 years. So let's talk about the actors, now that I've talked about the story in as vague terms as possible, but hopefully helped you to get an idea of what your experience is going to be. So all the actors deliver solid performances at the very least. Henry Cavill is back as Clark Kent, and Superman, and he's still great and relatable as both of those characters. Diane Lane is back as Martha Kent, who doesn't have a ton of scenes, but is really, I just feel for her. I care about her whenever she appears in this movie. Amy Adams back as Lois Lane. She's actually a major part of the story. I was afraid from the trailers that she was going to get sidelined and he would just have one conversation with her and then go back to fighting Batman or something. No, she's a major part of the story and the action, and she was both strong, funny, and fragile when appropriate. Now, I did have concerns about Ben Affleck, as many people did, but his Bruce Wayne to me was unsurprisingly great. I thought he's going to have a solid, suave, cool Bruce Wayne. It was his Batman I was concerned about, but the effects that they used on his voice, although I was concerned in the trailers, like, I don't know if this is going to fly for me, it actually won me over very quickly. I was very surprised about that. It's maybe not my favorite Batman performance, but certainly up there around Christian Bale somewhere. I think as far as Batman goes, Michael Keaton has the Batman performance I prefer. As far as Bruce Wayne goes, maybe Christian Bale, or actually maybe I would say Ben Affleck's Bruce Wayne I probably like the best. But I do think that his Batman performance is somewhere up there with Christian Bale, which I thought was really pretty solid. Gal Gadot does a solid job also with what was required of her in playing Wonder Woman, but it wasn't that much that was required of her. I'm still not quite convinced of her battle rage face, you know, right before she goes into battle. You know, I'm like, that looks like a model that someone just said, okay, now you're angry. Be angry face. Give us your angry face. You know, so I wasn't quite totally convinced that she was like, freaking battle rage, you know, which I would love to see in a performance from Wonder Woman. I really want to see her just go at it. It didn't feel like she was quite super hardcore invested. I don't know, maybe what I did was just a little scary and nobody would want to see that on Wonder Woman, but anyway, that was a small issue. It was easily overlooked. I think for what she was supposed to do in this movie, she did a rock-solid job. I did have trouble with Jesse Eisenberg's Lex Luthor, as I wondered if I might. In this movie, he's not like a powerful businessman. He's a brat who inherited his fortune from his father rather than building it himself. He's super intelligent, but he's more like a brat and nuisance than an intimidating threat. He is not intimidating. He's like that jerk supervisor at work, who many of us have had at some point, maybe working retail or wherever, who is like 10 to 20 years younger than you. He's fresh out of college. He loves exercising power. He's very insecure and shallow and immature, you know? So he's like, he's threatening in that you like, who knows what this stupid kid is going to do and that I'm going to have to deal with. So he's threatening in that sense, but he's not intimidating at all. And he's not menacing. He's not like imposing at all. And I kind of miss that. I kind of like that in my Lex Luthor, but you know, I'm willing to kind of accept a new interpretation of him. It didn't, like, wreck the movie or anything like that, and I wasn't, like, cringing every time he appeared. I was just like, this doesn't do it for me as much as, like, say, a Bryan Cranston from Breaking Bad Lex Luthor would have been. I think a much older one, like a Bryan Cranston Lex Luthor, oh, dude. Especially Bryan Cranston. Oh, that rumor, man, if you weren't aware, there was a rumor early on that never panned out that Bryan Cranston was going to play Lex Luthor in this movie, but I still wish that would have happened. Lex, though, is left in a place where he may be a much better villain and a much more intense and dark villain in future appearances in Justice League or Superman movies. And so I'll look forward to what he does there. I think there's definitely some good potential. But in this movie, he was more annoying pest than threat. Thankfully, he's not a major focus until near the end of the movie. As far as the stunts and visuals, there's nothing that raises the bar for me, but the action and the effects are still awesome to watch. I mean, this is a Zack Snyder movie. And after this, you know, I doubted him going into Man of Steel. I doubted him going into this one. I don't think I can say Zack Snyder can do no wrong, you know, and he's just like amazing or whatever. Because, you know, I think that there were some things that could have been a little bit better in this movie. But I need to stop doubting him with these things. He knows how to bring emotional weight and crazy awesome spectacle. I totally want to watch this again, probably in theaters. And the CGI, although the CGI big bad at the end of the movie looked very CGI to me, the weight given to his actions for the reasons I mentioned earlier kept me invested and made him feel more real than any CGI bad guy I've ever seen, because I knew that when he destroyed things, something horrible was happening to somebody somewhere in this world. And I was feeling the weight of the destruction as he was going about doing things, and how freaking unstoppable of a problem he was. I mean, Yeah, they really use that character well. Now, as far as relevance, as I mentioned before, Superman is modeling Jesus, particularly in the way Jesus was hated and misunderstood. And my wife picked up on a cross motif that was very appropriately used in the background of a major scene that I actually missed completely. I didn't miss the scene, I just missed the kind of like the subtle crosses in the background. So another reason to watch it again. Let's see, there were some talking head experts of various news programs, you know, when they're doing a story on CNN, and then they'll bring in some expert and they'll cut to him and say, "Professor of blah blah blah, what do you say about this?" You know, and he'll say, "Blah, blah, 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 blah." So anyway, they had some talking heads, you know, that were commenting on the nature of Superman and his significance, and there's a reference to the fact that one of these people says that Darwinian evolution means we're not special on this planet, just another organism, and the existence of aliens means we're even less special. And I'd actually argue that he's right. Under a naturalistic Darwinian view, which I do not take, but that we are not, there's nothing special, there's nothing particularly objectively valuable about humans. But since science alone is not equipped to reveal every truth in the universe, even a good scientist will tell you that, I'd argue that what makes us special is not our organic complexity or physical properties, but the fact that in an intangible way, we were made to somehow be reflections of the God, the creator of all reality, who also willingly chose to live with us, be humiliated, be tortured, be hated, be killed by us, also that our mess could be cleaned up by him and we could spend eternity in relationship with him. Why God would do that is completely beyond me at the end of the day, but the fact that he did gives humanity and each individual human immeasurable worth, immeasurable significance. Lex Luthor also brings up the age-old issue of God's love and his power. He claims that God cannot be both all-powerful and all-loving, presumably because he allows some horrific things to happen in the world without intervening to stop them. I think there are two modes that this claim can be made in. One is a mode of intellectual curiosity, like, I don't see how this can make sense. And in this mode, there are some very logical and satisfying responses to be given. But the other mode this claim can be made is in the midst of suffering or difficulty or fear or great loss. A person making this claim about God in the midst of that, in the midst of suffering or fear, maybe in the anger they're feeling as they're in that stage of mourning some kind of loss, they probably don't need a logical response. They probably don't want that. They probably wouldn't listen to one anyway, because what they're feeling is just too intense. It's too painful. And I think we need to be respectful of that. In my experience, this question is almost always raised in that second mode, from a place of pain or loss or fear or suffering. And I think the right response, at least at first, is compassion and support for those experiencing pain and loss. Support of them, though perhaps not their view of God. And that's a tricky thing to do. But when someone is able to think about the issue with a clearer mind, I think we can respond by saying that God is both all-loving and all-powerful, and he will actually intervene to remove all evil and suffering, just maybe not as fast as you want him to. And it's interesting because after Lex says that line with Superman, a few lines later he says, "And now God bends to my will." And I think that's a little bit revealing, because really when we are putting that argument out there, we're kind of wanting God to bend to our will and like fix this now on our timetable, when we want things to be fixed. Yet in the context of eternity, God's removal of all evil, whether he does it today or a billion years from now, are relatively in the same time frame, in the context of eternity. The problem is that we think of this life as like the main event. And we don't really think about the fact that there's eternity after this. We think like, this is the main event. This is all there is really worth thinking about. And so if our life doesn't go well, or if it goes horribly wrong, then God has failed us. And like, we are just, our entire existence is just spoiled forever. But this life isn't the main event. I think that's so important for us to realize. This life is not the main event, and it will eventually be seen as a tiny speck on the timeline of eternity. A speck not noticeably larger in that context than a speck lasting even a billion years. Now, I have no idea what your tastes are, but if I were a time traveler, I'd go back in time and say, "Oh, that reminds me, actually, of a part of this movie." Anyway, Peter, do what you're doing already. Go in with some concerns about Lex Luthor and Ben Affleck. Don't get hyped about it, but don't fear it's going to suck either, despite what you might be hearing from other people. In fact, maybe don't even listen to negative reviews so that you're not going in with either hype or like a negative bias. Just go in and be open to see like, okay, well, what's this going to be? I don't know. Maybe I'll like it. Maybe I won't. Try to get to that flat line and stay there, and then just go in and enjoy this experience. It won't quite knock it out of the park for you like Man of Steel. It will be even more emotionally moving at times, and an experience you'll have virtually no idea how to improve upon. This is a fantastic, fantastic experience, Peter, that you are freaking gonna enjoy! And I did. I want to remind you guys to go check out the other members of the Christian Geek Central Network, such as the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, the Untold podcast, and POSTOS. For more information about the CGC network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com.
Come forth, come forth. All assemble now. The need is upon us. Let the council be assembled. The Council of Geeks. Under the headship of Peter Franson, let those step forth who would represent their various geekeries. I will step forth as your resident Star Trek geek.
And I will step forth as your resident Tolkien geek.
What other geeks will step forth to represent their interests on the Council of Geekery, that we may discuss the various issues of the day from our own unique perspectives? Contact Lord Peter Franson today and declare what house for which you shall fight and represent in the High Council of Geekery.
Music by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetent.com.
Thanks, Matt and Kim, for putting together that promo. And again, I'd prefer Court Magician, I think, over being the Lord. I would like to have the power to shoot purple lightning. So if we can get on that, Matt, that'd be awesome. The moral, spiritual, philosophical topics is kind of, I think, the idea of what we'll be talking about, you know, and talking about what our corners of geekery usually say about them, as well as our own thoughts, you know. So, like, what does Firefly say about the nature of man? Does it say that he's basically good or basically evil or neither of those things or whatever, you know? So just different topics, you know, AI, evolution, good and evil, spiritual beings like angels and demons or potentially ghosts or, you know, whatever, you know, topic we might come up as we talk about spiritual beings or human worth. Where does it come from? You know, the idea of forgiveness and redemption, you know. So a lot of the different kinds of things that will pop up in like, say, my reviews as I'm talking about a movie or a game, you know, some kind of philosophical theme or idea that, you know, might trigger worthwhile thought or conversation. This is kind of like a further, you know, it's kind of like a response in some ways, or a further conversation, you know, as we are reflecting on it. Yeah, that would probably be the good way to put it, I suppose. This is the conversation, you know, that can potentially take place as we engage in the geek entertainment. So anyway, I might represent RPG video games in that roundtable, although if someone else wants that, I have several other angles that I could choose to come from. So if that sounds interesting to you, if you've got kind of like a corner of geekery that you're real passionate about and you have a good amount of experience in and feel like you could kind of represent that corner of geekery in a conversation like the one I described, then please let me know. Email me at paeter@spiritblade.com. The plan at this point is to do this via Google Hangouts, which by default does have like video involved, but I mean, if you don't want to appear on video, that's fine. It'd be fun to see you, but and then I'm, you know, planning on using that video both on the podcast, well, maybe not on the podcast, I'm not sure, probably on the podcast, and then also on the YouTube channel. So anyway, paeter@spiritblade.com if you want more information about being a part of that. Let's see here. What else? Oh, yeah. By now, my video, a review of Batman versus Superman, should be up at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral. And I know last week I think I said that my Vid Angel video would probably be up, but it's not yet. And I'm sorry about that. It's just some things in my schedule just got away from me. I had to cut some things out. So I haven't been able to put that together yet. It will take just a little bit of editing because I think I want to show kind of the website of VidAngel and kind of the interface a little bit there in that video. So I'm not sure when that's going to be coming up, but I just wanted to address that in case you've been wondering. But by now, my Batman vs. Superman video... Oh, wait, that's... Well, you'd see... No, I'm recording this... Oh, man, time travel is so confusing. By the time this goes up, Batman vs. Superman, my review, should be up... on youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral. And let's see here. Oh, yeah, I want to remind you guys that our Spring Agape Geek Out community event is coming this April. This time we're raising funds and awareness for the orphan/adoption ministry of Show Hope. You can get more information about them at showhope.org. God has a heart for orphans and for adoption, and Deuteronomy repeatedly commands Israel to care for the fatherless. James tells us to look after orphans in James 1:27, and God himself has adopted all non-Jewish believers into his family, which is most of us, you and I, that are that. If you're listening to this, I mean, I think statistically that's probably true anyway. I don't think I have a predominantly Jewish listenership here, but I guess I could be wrong. Anyway, but that idea is taken from Romans 8:15. Anyway, I'm hosting a small game night April 9th at my house, and we'll probably put a basket out with some info about Show Hope and maybe just show a video promo for the ministry partway through. I haven't decided yet, but it's a, you know, it's a low, small scale kind of thing. It's probably just going to be a regular game night with my regular group of college students that I game with monthly. So it doesn't have to be this big, huge planned event. It can just be something small, you know. And I'm not pushing for a goal, you know, fundraising number like I do with Extra Life. This event, I think, is more about raising awareness and just making ourselves and others that are a part of the event with us aware of some of the things that we can choose to be a part of, as specifically, I think, as believers, although you're certainly welcome to have an event that doesn't specifically target believers. But anyway, I hope you'll look at your April calendar and schedule an event, small or large, where you can invite those in your life to enjoy the geeky things that you enjoy while helping you participate in what God is calling us to. And then I hope also you'll share how that event goes over at agapegeekout.com in the comments there. A-G-A-P-E is how you spell agape, agapegeekout.com. And lastly, if you want to help make sure Spirit Blade Productions can keep doing what we're doing or do more of it both faster and better, well, you can make a donation of any amount, anytime, or become a part of the Spirit Blade Insider Program and get monthly exclusive goodies. So for more info, you can visit our About page at spiritblade.com. And of course, while you're there, you're also invited to support us by purchasing a download of one of our original sci-fi or fantasy audio dramas for a friend or a family member with our available gift codes. Again, for info, visit spiritblade.com.
The truth will set you free.
Truth is that which corresponds to fact or reality. To assert that truth is not absolute is a self-defeating proposition. Now, lots of things are possible, but our beliefs should reflect the best explanation of the available evidence. I'm no expert, but the information is out there. You'd be amazed what you can learn if you spend some time in search of truth.
The truth will set you free.
Well, in this segment, I attempt to examine the Bible and dissect some of the churchy language that we often take for granted, digging into history and languages when I'm able to try and get at the heart of the text so we can hopefully see and apply at least some of what God has for us in these words today. Now, I'm not formally trained in Scripture. I'm just a guy, you know, using resources and a questioning mind to try and get at the truth, and that's something that we can all do. So this also functions as an invitation to join me in doing that and making that a habit in your life. Now, this time we're looking at a topic instead of a portion of the Bible. Most of the time I'm looking at a portion of the Bible in this segment, but now and then I like to take a little detour to look at a topic instead. But I am aiming to use the Bible to inform my thinking as I look at this topic, and that topic is why the resurrection is vitally important for Christian geeks to believe in. Maybe you're listening to this just before or just after Easter, or maybe at a totally different time of year. It's Easter coming up this weekend, and so that's kind of why I have this on my mind a bit. But I mean, it's a relevant topic any time of year. Why the resurrection is vitally important for Christian geeks specifically to believe in is kind of the angle I'm coming at today. So, you know, yeah, we believe as Christians in the resurrection already, but I'm talking about believe in like we believe in the steering wheel that might be in your hands right now or the seat beneath you. To live in full as God wants us to, we need to have belief like that, because the literal, physical, bodily resurrection of Jesus confirms all the things he claimed about himself and confirms he has the power to do for us what he has promised. 1 Corinthians 15:20 in the ESV says, "But in fact, Christ has been raised from the dead, the first fruits of those who have fallen asleep," and fallen asleep being a metaphorical language of the day, referring to people who died. Believers in Jesus have been promised rescue from death. Jesus is compared to the first product reaped from a field during harvest. So in his resurrection, he's the first fruits of those who believe in Jesus and have died, meaning that one day they will also experience the same kind of bodily resurrection that he did. This reality means that this life is not the main event. It is not the summary of who we are and what we are made for. It means that even at the end of our lives, as we look back, our success or failure in our endeavors does not summarize who we are. It means that freaking Batman is wrong when he says, what is the line? I'm trying to remember the point. I should have put this in my notes, but I didn't. And that's why it's all going to crap right now. You guys, somebody's screaming it out right now as you listen to this. It's not who I am underneath, but what I do that defines me, right? He's wrong. He is full of crap, at least from the perspective of someone who is a believer in Jesus. The resurrection of Jesus also confirms that God is in control even when horrible things happen, and that he's able to use those events to bring about something good. John chapter 2, verses 18 through 22 in the ESV reads, "So the Jews said to him, 'What sign do you show us for doing these things?' Jesus answered them, 'Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up.' The Jews then said, 'It has taken 46 years to build this temple, and will you raise it up in 3 days? But he was speaking about the temple of his body. When therefore he was raised from the dead, his disciples remembered that he had said this, and they believed the scripture and the word that Jesus had spoken. It was God's plan that Jesus be humiliated and disrespected during his ministry, and even more so leading up to and including his execution. And scripture calls Jesus God's unique son, which means it was part of God's plan to allow some horrific and humiliating things to happen to someone he loved more than we can describe in words or even understand. God didn't allow this because he's cruel or uncaring, but because he wanted to bring about something far better and more than worth the pain and suffering that came about in the meantime. And God does the same thing through our own suffering. Romans 8:28 in the ESV reads, "And we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good for those who are called according to his purpose." And I bring that verse up pretty frequently, I feel like, on this podcast. I hope you guys aren't getting tired of me bringing that one up. It's posted on my wall above my computer monitor because I found that for me, it's something I need to repeat and remember and fixate on because I forget it so quickly because I'm so negative. And it's so easy for me to just think negatively about my circumstances. And so this is like a dose of corrective medicine. Does that metaphor even make any sense? What's corrective medicine? I don't know. Anyway, but I mean, I need this. I need this because my brain gets off track and I need to remember this reality. So anyway, the resurrection confirms that there is a bigger picture. That God was doing something. It was not just this tragedy that happened to Jesus. He was doing something through this. And he is doing something through the horrible humiliation or criticism or suffering and pain that we experience. He is doing something. The resurrection confirms that God is doing something through all of that. It confirms that there's a bigger picture, that there's a rock-solid reason to be hopeful about the future, even as we experience some fraction of the mistreatment or suffering that Jesus was allowed to experience. The bodily resurrection of Jesus also gives us hope for a real bodily existence ourselves in eternity. Some people, even Christians, are willing to accept a sort of spiritual resurrection for Jesus, but they don't believe he actually rose again with a real physical body. But the Bible clearly teaches his resurrection was physical. Luke chapter 24, verses 2 and 3, or John chapter 20, verse 27. So you got to kind of monkey with the text or or just, you know, doubt in its, gosh, going off script now. Again, or doubt its faithful transmission through history. And that's a different topic, but a worthwhile one to go through. If you're having doubts yourself, it is totally worthwhile to dig into how the Bible was preserved over time, and you know, and the really concrete evidence that we have that says, yeah, this is a faithful representation of the original words. So that's a study worth doing. And I'm going to mention actually some material at the end that I had something else in mind for, but actually the same material would be good for those purposes as well. If you're wondering or doubting or having questions about, like, yeah, can we really trust this was passed down reliably? So stay tuned for those resources at the end. But anyway, you do have to monkey with the text, because the Bible does teach that his resurrection was physical. You see that in Luke 24 verses 2 and 3 and John chapter 20 verse 27. And it's because of his physical resurrection that we have hope for the same kind of resurrection. I don't know about you, but I don't find as much comfort in the idea of being some kind of wispy, intangible spirit, unable to feel or interact with physical reality. And if we think of Jesus' resurrection as only spiritual, it's hard to see that as a victory over death, isn't it? In fact, in that case, what really is the difference between living only as a spirit and experiencing resurrection? Jesus may as well be dead if his resurrection was only spiritual. 1 Corinthians 15, verses 19 and 20 in the ESV says, "And if Christ has not been raised, your faith is futile, and you're still in your sins. Then those also who have fallen asleep in Christ have perished. If in Christ we have hope in this life only, we are of all people most to be pitied. But in fact," and I read this verse earlier, "but in fact Christ has been raised from the dead, the first fruits of those who have fallen asleep." Jesus is actually alive, not in some wishful thinking, metaphorical kind of way. He's physically alive, and his body exists in a location somewhere. The future life he promises is not some vague, dreamlike existence. Believers will not exist in some frozen, floating position holding a single note with their voices for all eternity. We will have bodies, and we will be doing things, doing what we were made to do and fulfilling a purpose that we constantly have an unfulfilled longing for right now. The reality of a literal, physical resurrection for Jesus is the reason we can have real hope as we get up to do a job that is frustrating or have interactions with people that are difficult. Eternal life is not a nice idea we try to trick ourselves into believing. It sure shouldn't be. It is really going to happen, and all we have to do is make it through a few more years before eternity begins. Years that we can use to invest in God's agenda and experience additional blessing in eternity as a result of participating in that. There used to be an expression describing believers who didn't engage in the world around them. People would say, "Oh, he's so heavenly minded, he's no earthly good." But I want to suggest that the natural inclinations of our hearts lead us to neglect thinking about heaven when we should be thinking about it. In fact, being more heavenly minded should result in us being more earthly good to those around us. Our hope for eternity gives us greater freedom from the opinions of others that may weigh us down. It shrinks our measurement of painful things. It gives us perspective and good reason to invest in others and to sacrifice comfort to engage in what God is doing. If you find yourself, like I do now and then, believing in the idea of Jesus' resurrection more than the reality of it, the concrete historical reality of it, you might find it useful to remind yourself of the concrete reasons we have to believe that this was an actual event that happened in history. A good starting point might be to read a book like The Case for Christ by Lee Strobel, especially if you're not used to to reading nonfiction. I think The Case for Christ is a great starting point because the writer presents his research as a series of interviews that he had with different experts, and he describes the story of kind of what he was feeling as he was getting ready to go to these interviews, the thoughts he was having as he was interviewing these experts. And so I think it makes a really good read if you're normally just used to reading fiction. I would highly recommend Lee Strobel's The Case for Christ, if you haven't checked that one out before. Or certainly more on the technical side of things, but I think still a good entry point as you're trying to figure out what the core issues are that you want to really zero in on would be Evidence That Demands a Verdict by Josh McDowell. Both of those books include numerous references to other resources that you can go to for even deeper and more specific examination of the facts. You might find as you get into these topics that like, oh, okay, yeah, I understand. Here's my real issue. And you kind of zoom in. And both of these books provide references to other books that will be more specific and probably more technical, just as a heads up, but more specific to maybe the questions that you have floating around in your mind. So, again, The Case for Christ by Lee Strobel, or Evidence That Demands a Verdict by Josh McDowell. I'd also recommend William Lane Craig's Defenders podcast as a great free resource. Dr. William Lane Craig is what's known as an apologist, which really doesn't have anything to do with apologizing. I had a friend once that said, I don't think, you know, God should have to apologize. He was just kind of misunderstanding, you know, the idea of apologist. It doesn't mean that there's any kind of like apologizing going on in the sense of, oh, I'm sorry, you know. The idea is a defender, you know, is that's what an apologist is. And so he's a defender of the Christian faith, and basically he's made it his career to study the various fields of other experts and bring together the best information available on the topic that he is defending, which is namely the Christian faith and the Bible, you know. And one of his specialties, if not his main specialty, is the resurrection itself. So Defenders is the name of his podcast, Dr. William Lane Craig. If you just do a search on Defenders podcast, I'm pretty sure you'd find it. And he even labels them. So like if you're specifically interested in the resurrection, then you should be able to find that pretty easily with just a little bit of scrolling. So William Lane Craig's Defenders podcast, a great free resource. To sum up, we don't have to live life like we've always lived it or like the rest of the world lives it. We can live life increasingly with real, tangible hope while being a part of God's transforming work in the world. And it all starts with truly believing in the historical and present reality that Jesus is risen. He is risen indeed. Feedback. Give me your thoughts on this podcast or Christian Geek Central or the YouTube channel or anything else we're doing. What should we keep? What should we change? Or what's on your mind you'd like a potentially uninformed opinion on? We want to make this show and all of Christian Geek Central as fun and useful as we can, but I got to hear from you to do that. I don't know what you find fun and useful unless you tell me. So send an email or an audio file recorded on your phone to paeter@spiritblade.com. Well, I want to thank Matt McKinney for heading up the High Council of Geeks that we're working to put together, and also Offscreen Kim for being a part of that promo. Stay tuned for DS9 Shawarma featuring Matt McKinney and Offscreen Kim after the credits, or jump back to episode 400 if you want to start from the beginning. Next week, if God wants it to happen, I'll have another installment of the Christian Geek Radar, plus more Trek talk as Matt McKinney takes a critical look at the Prime Directive, which is a major concept of the Star Trek franchise. And he points out some major flaws in the moral framework of Star Trek that are centered around the Prime Directive. I just listened to it today. I'm still turning over some of the finer points of his argument in my mind, so get ready to put your thinking cap on, and I'll bet you'll get some great things out of what he shares. Till then, check out SpiritBlade.com and Christian Geek Central for more stuff made just for you. Thank you so much for making time for this show. I hope you have a great week. And then you'll join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast as we continue to geek out and seek the truth.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Painter Frampton with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.com. Thank you for listening.
wormhole.
The Dominion has endured for 2,000 years and will continue to endure long after the Federation has crumbled into dust.
No!
5 years ago, no one had ever heard of Bajor or Deep Space Nine, and now all our hopes rest here.
Hello and welcome back again. We just finished watching Babel, the fifth episode, and one of the first ones that I really remembered watching when this show first came out. It's an appropriately named episode. We find out that there was a virus that was planted here when the station was first built, when the Cardassians ran it. Bajorans had planted this thing, but it gets activated by O'Brien when he's going about his duties trying to get the station actually to work. And this virus has an interesting effect. This is one of those sci-fi viruses. It causes aphasia. And aphasia is a real-life thing, but it's pretty rare. It's when your brain doesn't comprehend things correctly, and your brain works fine, but what you do is you misidentify things. You can't communicate. Like, you'll hold a flower, but you'll call it a dog in your mind. And what you hear doesn't make sense either. It's basically, it's very fittingly named episode because it's like the Tower of Babel. Everyone was suddenly speaking gibberish. And this is an okay episode. It's not great, but there are some good moments. But part of the problem is by the end, they're trying to talk that it's very serious and meaningful. And people will die from this virus. But the problem is that when you find out you have the virus, it's nothing like you bleed from the eyes or you pass out or something like that. You start talking gibberish. And it's very hard to take it seriously when the music gets all serious while they're going, chair, donkey, rubber nipples. And that's supposed to be serious and dangerous, and it's pretty silly. So it fails in that. Early on, it's okay, because early on it seems like it's just a fine, harmless little thing until we find out people can die from it. Like I said, there's nothing really bad about the episode except for that, and that's just that it loses the drama. There are some great moments. Quark and Odo, they really steal the show in the beginning of the series, and they're stealing the show here, too. They have some great interplay back and forth. Odo is basically the cop of the town, and Quark is the leader of their Civilian Merchants Association, and he's a pretty shady guy himself. So they're often at odds, and it's pretty funny. One thing I will say, this episode did very well at the very beginning. Star Trek often falls back on the captain's log for its exposition. It'll just dump, and so typical Star Trek, you might begin with O'Brien giving his engineer's log, and he'll just say, I've been doing this and running nonstop and fixing everything, and nothing's working. But this episode, instead, we quote-unquote waste our time watching O'Brien do repair after repair after repair. And it's not very efficient as far as storytelling, but it's very efficient as far as character. Because we see O'Brien. We see him get annoyed. And what's funny is, it's not even an O'Brien-centric episode. He's just the first victim. He's the one who activates this. But we really don't need to watch him. But this tells us so much about O'Brien, that he's just a regular guy, goes about his job. You know, he complains about his work like a regular person does. He's not one of these Federation types who floats above the air and whose smart farts smell like roses and all that. No, he's a normal guy. He gets cranky, he gets in bad moods. And this episode, we were shown that, and it's a nice thing. You know, in a fairly mediocre and average episode, but there are some standout moments like that. And not much more to say about this. You know, the show's getting its identity, and it's, for Star Trek, it's a strong beginning, but for the show, this is still weak. It's going to get a whole lot better. So if you're sticking with us on this, just hold on. Soon enough, the first season's going to be kind of a slim one, but it will get much stronger. Don't worry.